Good morning. Welcome to the Roundtable panel. Music courtesy of Garland Jeffries this morning, playing at the Linda on Friday the 24th. That's this Friday, for those of you keeping score at home. TheLinda.org for more information. We'll be playing more music by Garland Jeffries throughout the hour. Welcome to the panel. It's a delight to have you here. WAMC's Alan Chartok joins us. Good morning, Alan.
How do you do?
Fine. Alan, thank you, as always. It's good to see you.
Well, my mother met somebody on the street on Fire Island when she didn't like him.
Oh, so you don't like me?
No. I'm just telling you.
Well, that's what you're saying.
Not really.
I said hello, and then you said that, and then you said that's what the way I would say somebody when I don't like them.
No, you make a good point, but I love you, Joe.
I confess it. Okay, keep telling yourself that. Albany journalism professor and investigative reporter Rosemary Armeo.
I'm not saying anything, because I don't want another one of those exchanges.
Yeah, that was awkward, wasn't it? And Times Union associate editor Mike Spain.
Good morning, everybody.
Yes, this way I answer when I hate you. Okay, great. Well, let's get off to the races. Good morning, everyone. Welcome. We have a lot of stuff to discuss. Let us begin with, I guess, you know, there are a lot of big stories. Where would you like to begin? Do you, anybody have a...
Syria.
Okay, let's start with Syria. Go. Here we are. I'm trying to bring it up on the screen. That's my
crutch.
It's saying that it's...
The peace conference begins today. A peace conference begins today.
And we got into this whole thing about who was... Who do
was
we invite and what happens. And
and
this becomes a huge deal. And then there's a point where you wonder if anything's going to happen at all. If the whole peace deal is in question... And talks over Syria are set to begin. Iran not invited. So where do we go from there?
Well, Iran uninvited.
Yeah, that's even worse.
Yeah, right. Yeah,
it's even worse.
That seems like such a debacle for the UN and Secretary General
Ban Ki-moon
to kind of at the last minute invite Iran into the talks, knowing how strong Iran is backing the Syria regime. And how opposed the U.S. is to that. It just seemed like it was an automatic problem. Why did he do it?
This conference has been 2 years in the putting together, into the establishment of it. It hasn't even begun. The conditions have changed radically in the last 2 years since Russia and the United States agreed maybe we better sit down and talk about it. And I can see the Secretary General thinking Iran is a player and ought to be here. But for him to go ahead and invite them without checking with anybody else just seems incredible. To me, very incompetent.
I have an even bigger problem with
and
the whole thing.
That is?
I don't know who our friends are. The U.S. government seems to think that the rebels are our friends. But apparently we haven't learned anything from any of these other places. So that the idea of a peace conference, okay, peace conference. But we, at the same time that we're sponsoring this and that we want it to happen, we're not being, our so-called friends will be our enemies in no time at all if the wrong faction takes over. I think we're playing with fire here.
No, I think the U.S. And officials are quite aware that we don't have a clear ally or a powerful, good ally anyplace in this, but wants to be part of a peace talk, as well it should be. We are the world's policeman, whether we like that role or not.
No, but we keep saying, Rosemary, that Assad has to go.
Correct.
We're not exactly playing a neutral role in this.
Right. And the preconditions of this peace conference are not neutral. They're about setting up a new government, a transitional government, which also indicates that the ruling leader has to go.
Yeah.
Right. And that's what Iran said. Wait a minute. We didn't say yes to that, which means that the Secretary General invited them to come talk without
Getting their buy-in.
What the preconditions were, which again is incredibly incompetent on a peace talk that already has a whole lot of problems facing it. I think it's important for people to be talking when there's problems like this. If nothing else, you've got them all in one place and talking. That was good in Vietnam, although it took, 2.5 years?
Yeah.
So it's not like you're going to have a solution in a month of talking. But it's
a lot
so
better
jinxed.
Than not talking.
Yeah.
But is the game loaded?
So right
the
now.
Question I have is the game loaded? I mean, you know, it's clear we're calling for a peace conference. We want to see an outcome. But we've already announced the outcome that we this country wants to see. So you see what's gone on in Egypt, you see what's gone on in these other places, and then you say, all right, Afghanistan and Iran now, Iraq now. It seems to me that it may be an untenable position for the United States.
The Syrian government has agreed to be part of the talks, even though the precondition is that the present Syrian government must be dissolved, in essence.
Some of them could still be part of the new government.
Exactly.
Yeah, and that's,
yeah,
I think,
it's some sort of power
sharing
they have in mind.
They,
I think that the general analysis of this thing that I've been reading is that Syria is winning, the Assad government is winning the war. They have possession. They're in charge, and therefore they have nothing to lose by going to a quote peace conference, because in the end they've won already. That's their position.
That is indeed the case, and if you'll remember, because it's been 2 years in the making to get this conference together, things changed radically. And at one point, the U.S. was going to invade, raid, whatever word you know you might choose to use. The United States was going to militarily punish Syria and show them that maybe they weren't in as much control as they think they are, and that in fact they have now. They have changed the equation.
Somebody educate me. Somebody mentioned just now the Vietnam
Paris peace talk.
But there too, the outcome was pretty obvious by the time the outcome happened, right? I mean, by the time it actually happened, because the Viet Cong had won.
Yeah, the U.S. was crippled and withdrawing, and
right.
Viet Cong
so, what
winning.
What the peace conference may be is a framework for the, I guess, the establishment of some new order that includes the current Syrian government. I mean, that, you know, may be the reality here.
You know, it's so interesting because, not to widen this, but if you remember the whole Korean mess, and Eisenhower campaigns for office and says, I will go to Korea. You don't remember that, guys? And Eisenhower says, I will go to Korea, which he does. And out of that comes the negotiated settlement and the 38th parallel, which is where it sort of all started. However, if it had not been, in my view, and somebody will disagree with this, for General of the Army Douglas MacArthur, there would have been a different outcome, because the Chinese would not have come pouring over the border because he decided he was going to chase them. You remember that?
I don't.
And Harry Truman fired him for that, in one of the most courageous acts of any president. So some of these negotiations have backstories that are historically the reason. Vietnam, you have a lost war already. Here you have Assad in charge of space.
And he's in control.
Yes, yeah. And so
the difference, Alan, is that in both of those wars, the United States was directly involved, troops on the ground involved, and that cannot happen, and I don't think will happen in Syria. I think the peace conference remains one last place that the U.S. can exert some sort of influence in the region.
Well,
maybe,
you know, there's always the issue of boots on the ground versus the potential for boots on the ground. And thank God we're not there. We're not in it.
And because we're not in it to that level, I think the level of interest on the part of the average American citizen is casual. You know, they don't realize that it's such a powder keg and that, you know, millions of people are suffering.
Well,
you know,
haven't had a great level of interest in Afghanistan where we do have troops on the ground.
Right. That's exactly right.
And it's the American people. It's the media that serve them who do not write about or have what they pulled out of Afghanistan. They don't cover it. Although it has been interesting to watch the Iraq coverage in the last few weeks as Fallujah and other places have collapsed.
But in order to understand, my point would be that in order to understand what's happening, One would have to understand the politics of the situation pretty well. In other words, here we have guys like Karzai, who hates our guts and we hate his guts, and we're depending on.
Well,
that's
that complicates.
Not Syria you're talking about.
That complicates Afghanistan.
No, I'm talking about in each of these situations.
Very complicated.
There's background. I mean, as you take the Israeli-Palestinian talks, for example. My teacher back at Hunter, back in the old days, John Stessinger, wrote a book called The Might of Nations, I believe, and his point was that in order for the Arabs not to kill each other, they had to have a common sort of enemy, mm-hmm. and that enemy was Israel. If you had no Israel, all those years ago, the Shia and the Sunnis would have been doing even worse things to each other than they are now. So if we're going to understand and talk about this stuff, then we better understand what each of those situations are and who the players are. And is Saudi Arabia a major player, which they are, and who are they giving money to, and all the rest.
We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll continue. We welcome your comments. Roundtable@WAMC.org. Roundtable@WAMC.org. We'll be back after this short break.
Support for WAMC comes from Epic 18 Vermont Artisans Manchester Center, an artisan-owned and operated cooperative craft gallery honoring handmade traditions and contemporary design. EPOCHVermont.com. Mr. Ruder Plumbing, working to fix slow-draining sinks, laundry lines, repairing and replacing kitchen and bathroom faucets, high-efficiency water heaters, septic systems, and more. TheHudsonValley.MrRuder.com. And Emma Willard, an all-girl boarding school working to help students discover their own voices. EmmaWillard.org.
Be a contortionist, doing that and a doing this, swallowing rings and swords and fame. Life was bent and I was twisted, hanging in the playgrounds of the rich, which is wild and what is which. Time gone by just got the itch. Stop the music.
Garland Jeffries providing our music this morning for this hour, playing at the Linda on Friday, January 24th, linda.org. For more information, we are talking about a whole range of topics this morning. We'd love to hear from you. Roundtable@WAMC.org. In our 7 minutes before the news break, we could probably fill that by talking about Governor Christie. So, two senior state officials in New Jersey are vehemently denouncing allegations of political strong-arming in the governor's name, the latest in a series of controversies lashing the Christie administration. So, the lieutenant governor, Kim Guadagno, publicly denied an assertion by the Hoboken mayor, Don Zimmer, that she conditioned Superstorm Sandy recovery money last year on Zimmer's support for a redevelopment project backed by Christie. Zimmer said the ultimatum came down in a parking lot and involved a project proposed by a real estate developer, the Rockefeller Group, with ties to Christie. She said that the lieutenant governor invoked Christie's name in laying out the condition for storm relief and has relayed her story to federal prosecutors. The exact quote from the lieutenant governor is, "Mayor Zimmer's version of our conversation in May of 2013 is not only false, but it is illogical and does not withstand scrutiny when all of the facts are examined."
Some press agent did a good job on
and preparing her for that.
However, the interesting thing by the mayor is, I'm willing to go before a federal grand jury and tell
under
that
oath.
Under oath. Now, the question, of course, is the lieutenant governor?
The timing does worry me. She spoke out. When did this come out? Sunday, in the morning,
right.
The talk shows.
Yeah.
And now Monday, we get a response. I mean, if you were the lieutenant governor and you hear this, wouldn't you immediately say to any listening reporter, of which there are many, mm-hmm. that's a lie. That didn't really happen. Why the delay? That bothers me.
Well, because people were gathered around a table discussing what words were going to be used.
I think it looks that way.
The phrase that kept on being used and that she used and I read that keeps being picked up by the press is that it's illogical. And to me, without being snarky or sarcastic, to me, the only thing that's illogical is that a lieutenant governor would have that much power.
Well,
it's not really power, though. She was acting as a lackey.
It's more of a threat kind of thing.
This brings up the whole suggestion that some of the quasi-defenders of Governor Christie are making, and that is that he was surrounded by people who invoked his name and took it on themselves to muscle through issues and get compliance. And he was not specifically aware that was happening, but to everybody who was hearing from his aides, you know, the mayor of Hoboken in this case and the mayor of Fort Lee and others, they assumed that it was done right from the top because the mayor's name was invoked by all his aides and that he was not directly involved. And so this kind of does that would explain it either way. I mean,
that hurts him though too,
yeah.
Because you can't be president and not have control over your staff, you know. So Christie can't get out of it that way.
But what's emerging here is it sort of an effort to insulate him as much as possible. If no smoking gun, no smoking howitzer comes out that connects him to the direct knowledge that these kinds of negotiations and hardball politics were going on in his name and he was not aware of it, it will give him the way to clean house and emerge with a more professional staff and be contrite. And his poll numbers aren't that bad.
No, they're good.
So the Hoboken mayor goes on Anderson Cooper last night and says...
She's everywhere, by the way.
Yeah, she is. But she's on Anderson Cooper last night and she says, look... When she had the conversation with me in the parking lot, she said, if you ever go to say anything to anybody about this, I'm going to deny it.
And here she is
denying
it.
And she said,
yeah. I know.
She's doing exactly what she said she's going to do. She's just denying it.
That's a catch-22 either way.
Yeah.
You know, that's an interesting line, you know. And so I go back to what you were saying, Rosemary, of, you know, why the deafening delay in time of saying, you know, that's absolutely false.
The story broke Saturday, actually. It was at least 24 hours before there was even a peep.
You've all been.
Monday, actually. 2 days.
Monday it went on to the Sunday show. Well, you'd think they would have been ready for that.
Yeah, right. Well, here's the point. Everybody's going to get called before either a federal grand jury or an assembly committee with subpoena power, and somebody is going to have to lie under oath.
It's a dirty job.
I mean, you've got two different sides on this thing, and somebody's going to have to say.
It's a requirement.
Yeah. Right. By the way, we had a letter yesterday. It was too late to put on, or the day before, which said Professor Shartok's use of the word lie is questionable in that a lie means you intend to not tell the truth, as opposed to not telling the truth. I thought I ought to mention that I'd been criticized for that.
Well, a lie is intentionally not telling the truth.
That's right. That's right. You know, but...
I mean, if you know something...
And you're asked it...
And you say a different version, or you say nothing.
Right.
But what if you say, I don't really remember?
Well, that happens
all
the time.
Is that a lie?
I'm sorry, I don't recall, yeah, I don't
Senator.
Recall that.
You will remember that wonderful line in The Godfather, when the consigliere stands up and yells, apology, apology. Does this have anything to do with anything? No, but I just thought I'd mention it.
And on those words, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we will continue our conversation. We have many more topics to talk about, some really good ones, too. We will be back in just a moment. In the meantime, write to us. It's roundtable at WAMC.org. You can also comment on our webpage or our Facebook page or tweet us at WAMC Roundtable, at WAMC Roundtable. We'll be back after this short break. You want to just do the next 25 minutes on banking?
Banking. I've got or airlines. I'm ready to talk about airlines again.
Airlines, banking. We'll do that. No.
Growl.
Let's go on safer ground and talk about what is happening today, and that is the budget announcement in New York State from Governor Mario Cuomo.
Andrew Cuomo.
Wow. it is already making news, said to include ethics and campaign finance reforms. And Mike, you've been working on this.
Our guys at the state capitol have, you know, Casey Seiler and James Odotto have a story today that kind of looks ahead. You know, a lot of this is already dribbled out. It came out in the last few days that there's going to be $4 million in there to beef up the enforcement of current election laws. You know, the Board of Elections has been criticized widely as having no teeth and doing nothing to enforce the state's current election laws. And there's also going to be some seed money in there for a publicly funded campaign fund, I guess, that would match contributions if certain candidates on statewide races would stay within certain realms. And
but not until, Mike, let me just get this straight, until Governor Cuomo the Younger runs for office another time.
Well, it takes a little while to get this.
$32 million in the bank. Yeah.
That's true. The governor does have a war chest of something like $32 million as he goes into his reelection year. But, I mean, realistically, this kind of matching campaign financing will not, I mean, couldn't be set up and implemented by the time of this election cycle. I'm, in all fairness.
No, it was a cheap shot on my part, but I made it in order to point out the $32 million.
Right, and the other big story is how is he going to leverage a budget which the comptroller Tom DiNapoli says has a deficit of $1.7 billion, and turn it around, cover that deficit, and then give approximately $2 billion. Away in tax breaks to both individuals and businesses, and come up with a hunk of money for education and
for the
answer is casino revenues.
Right. Well, that is one of them. Yes, they hope to get to start. You know, the licensing fees. They hope that they'll actually be in hand before the end of this year. They're going to have a very aggressive rollout of the licensing process.
That they can be aggressive about.
Right, and then they want to begin to award those casino licenses and take in the money before the end of fiscal 2014. But more, still a lot of details. The governor's going to be out and about right afterwards, going around the state and defending this as the legislature begins to meet it out. Of course, they have an April 1 deadline to adopt a budget, and he's been good at that. He's been making that deadline after
well, they all have
not
because,
making it.
Because they all knew that they were in deep trouble.
The legislature.
The legislature, by not meeting this constitutional obligation to pass the budget on time. I think this governor is extraordinarily clever. He's got a whole bunch of fights going on, one of which is with De Blasio, obviously.
Over the funding of
pre-K. Over the pre-K, yeah.
De Blasio wants to tax the rich, essentially, people making over $500,000 to pay for pre-K.
In
New York City.
And New York City. And the governor says, I can give it to you anyway, but no tax rise. Don't you guys think that when this kind of stuff happens, the comptroller tells you you have this terrible deficit or you have a substantial deficit, and now you have a governor who comes and says, don't worry about it, we'll play with this and this and that, and there'll be no deficit. Don't you think that it raises certain issues among all of us that we're sort of being played for sheep?
Well, it's easy to be skeptical about how you can convert a almost $2 billion deficit into a surplus that it will enable tax cuts, pre-K, universal pre-K around the state for all children, and then pump a ton of money. Educators are asking for $1.9 billion to be new money into education, whether he comes close to that.
But the PowerPoint looks good.
It does.
PowerPoint looks pretty.
Okay. Here I go apologizing for the status quo again. But this is the way the budget process is supposed to work. It's a master
supposed
plan.
Supposed to?
It's supposed to work this way, yes, Joe.
Oh.
He is laying out. The governor is the fact that it's leaking out, I think, is intentional.
Oh, absolutely.
I got a call yesterday saying from one of the top guys saying, I'll call you between 8 and 9 to tell you what's coming in the budget. Now, I think they may have read my column this week.
This is government being responsive to public criticism.
It.
How is this a bad thing? We sat in this very show and criticized him for maybe not promoting campaign reform as much as he should have.
Right.
Now we hear about a budget that does purport to help campaign reform. How do we feel about it? This is good.
If he can clean up campaigns and add a ton of money to the funding of education, pay for universal pre-K, and give everybody a tax cut. This guy
then
deserves.
We should elect him president.
We should elect him, re-elect him in the fall.
Exactly.
Well, he's got good numbers, good polling.
But you don't understand. So you don't see it is really you of all people do not understand why there would be a skepticism on all of this.
I understand that there's skepticism.
Fiscal trickery that could happen to make that a reality.
Good for you, Jay.
I understand that there's skepticism, but there's no trickery involved until we have a passed budget. What we have now is a discussion.
Well,
of what
that's
will
true.
Be in
yes,
the
but
final budget.
Absolutely
yes,
true. But this is the proposed budget.
Yeah, but there should be.
There'll be detail.
No, actually, it's not the proposed budget. That doesn't happen until this afternoon. What this is leaked details about the budget.
Well, no, it's the same thing because they're telling you what they got. They're telling you what they have in the budget. But I'm telling you, I think Joe's absolutely right. You know, right about this, because we don't know what their intentions are. For example, Skelos is already saying, we're not going along with this, or we're not going to campaign financing. Now Cuomo has the issue. I did it. That bad man over there, who I have kept in power, by the way, is saying no, which is exactly why I kept him in
power.
Jeff
Klein had something to do with that too.
But the way that he kept Skelos in power as a minority in terms of the Republicans in the legislature was to at least look the other way when Jeff Klein came along.
Yeah.
So it gets really complicated. It's not just step one; it's step six that you have to look at.
So some of these promises of a new budget may take a while, and they may require some negotiations that may change.
Well, what does he
lose?
Right. What does he lose? My point is, he says campaign financing, Board of Elections. Let's take a look at that one. He says, okay, the Board of Elections got two Democrats, two Republicans on it. Now, because they're not doing anything, we're going to bring in a team of investigators. But they still report to the four, shall I say, whatever. I can't use that word. But those four, I can't. Thank you, Joe. But
schnooks.
Yeah, the four, that's a good word. The four schnooks who are going to be equally divided in terms of looking at how the investigator works. I mean, it's...
I don't know. I think that you're calling for a government that, what is he supposed to do? Come out with a budget all balanced and set to go in the proposal that answers all of our demands and makes you all like gasp and wonder at his genius. It isn't going to happen. That's not the way budgets get passed.
Well, just real quick, because so many times,
I mean, how many times have we heard this? I mean, I remember in covering the State of the State where you go down and I said, if I heard it one more time, I was just going to vomit in the mm-hmm. grand hallway, which is, you know, the devil's in the details. The devil's in the details. Okay, well, these are part of the details. And now we're still saying, well, the devil's in the details of the budget. Well, this should be the detail, shouldn't it?
This it's not, though. Even his final version is something that will be debated in the Assembly and in the Senate before it's passed. So why should he not put out a whole lot of things and have areas to negotiate with? The president does this.
But does he know what they're going to do? He knows damn well what Dean Skelos is going to say about campaign financing, right?
Of what he can get away with
so
and what he can't.
Are you suggesting that by proposing it, it's disingenuous because he knows it has no chance of
I'm
passing.
Not saying it's disingenuous, but I am saying that as consumers, we all ought to be looking at this and say, okay, I understand this. Now, there's always policy motivation and there's political motivation. And with this guy, who is the master of political motivation, you have to see what he wants to achieve in terms of his own career.
Well, he wants to be president. Okay.
Okay.
Now, with Chris Christie out of the picture,
it might be a little easier.
He's got to take care of Hillary first. But yeah, okay. So, I mean, I don't know. Is this any different than the Super Bowl teams trash-talking each other, getting ready to psych out the other player? Isn't that going on here, too?
Yeah, but
he's
why?
Trying to get
Rosemary.
I didn't vote for the Super Bowl team.
Miss Rosemary.
There's
but
some
then
pain in this room
why do you
that.
Think the Super Bowl teams do that? Exactly. You make a profound point.
Why do
You've
I think
answered
they do
your
okay,
own
I'll
question.
Tell me my own thoughts. Why do I think the teams do
because
that?
Because they think they get an advantage by doing it that way.
Correct.
That's why they do it, and
correct.
That's why he does it.
He wants to win.
Yeah.
Well, we'll all know more details
at 2
o'clock today.
When the Super Bowl occurs.
When the Super Bowl of state politics occurs and the governor presents not only the poetry but the prose of how he's
going to
carry
out. But we already know
out.
The outcome.
Two things. One is that WAMC will have coverage throughout on Northeast Report as well as Northeast
sure.
Report Late Edition. We'll have a preview during Midday Magazine. A reminder also that the State of the Commonwealth Address is taking place tonight. We'll be airing that live at 7 o'clock.
Yeah, don't let anybody say that we don't you know, that the radio station doesn't do equal justice for Massachusetts.
And there have been some questions, some swirling, and some tweets going around of saying of whether the impending bad weather could actually have an effect on the State of the Commonwealth address. Let's just put it this way: if there is a State of the Commonwealth address tonight, we'll be covering it, and when there is one, we'll be covering it. Okay. There you go.
Are we skeptical about Duval Patrick as we are
no.
about Andrew Cuomo?
No.
Okay, so is that really the same?
I know both men fairly well, and I think Duval Patrick is just an extraordinary man. Well, and I think what's happening with him is that he said 2 terms and out, he meant it. When I said to him, you want to be vice president, because I think he'd be a terrific vice presidential candidate, he said, no, I don't want to work for anybody else, and I want to go and make some money. Now, this is now, as far as I'm concerned, an honest broker. He's a policy wonk. He is not angling to be president of the United States, although I certainly think he could be.
Hasn't Governor Cuomo been equally above board about what he wants to do? He wants to remain in politics and be president.
No, he doesn't say he wants to be president. No,
well,
in
part
fact,
of not it, wanting to be president is.
But we all know
part
he wants
of be,
to be
wanting to be president is saying not you're saying. Not saying
yeah.
I mean, Deval Patrick says he doesn't want
humble.
To be president, and you believe him. Andrew Cuomo says he doesn't want to be president, and you don't believe him.
That's correct.
Thank you. That's my point. Yeah, we are treating these two people completely different. They're both politicians.
Now, one difference is that Governor Patrick is at the end of a term, and he is not trying to be reelected as governor, and that changes the dynamic. It gives him a freedom to.
Cuomo hardly has to work at getting reelected. If we're going to quote the poll figures of which you are so fond in every other story we ever talk about, let's look at his poll figures. He doesn't need $32 million.
Did anyone see Casey Seiler's column on Sunday where he pretty much dismisses, I mean, he proves over and over that Donald Trump, of course, is not running for governor.
Well,
silly.
We all knew that.
Silly it was, but. And then he expresses just sadness at that because it'd be such a fun race to cover.
Oh, absolutely.
And reporters have often been accused of that kind of hanky-panky, which is, you know, help out somebody who's coming up from behind because it would be a good, interesting race to report on.
It'll be more fun.
Well, I don't think
I
he
thought
was
our last
saying that he would
gubernatorial
help out
race
Donald
was
Trump.
Pretty hilarious, too.
Yeah.
Carl
Where's
Paladino?
Carl? Yes, yeah. Is he back in the period? That was fantastic.
He ran for the Board of
very
Education.
Active.
He ran for the Board of Education in Buffalo, and
yes,
won.
Yes, Buffalo, yeah. Right.
And he's he just last week broke ties with Ed Cox, the Republican
Nixon,
state
son-in-law.
Chairman. Yeah, the son-in-law of Richard Nixon, who is the state Republican chairman.
And a wonderful guy.
And he had been, right, and he had been kind of trying to keep peace, Cox had, and last week, I don't know why, but Paladino just turned on him and got really nasty after all this time that he didn't attack Paladino.
What was the name of the Selma joke that she always tells Joe, which ends with the quote, you knew what I was when you took me in?
Right, yes. Let's take a break. We'll be back, and we'll have more verbal sniping and great love this morning.
Mooch!
It did not take you long, Rosemary, to get right back into the thick of it.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Me neither.
You know exactly what I'm talking about.
Welcome back, Rosemary.
Yeah.
We love you.
You were saying yesterday, I don't know if I'm going to remember how to do this. Obviously, you're right back into it. We'll be back right after the short break.
Support for WAMC comes from Sunflower Natural Foods Market, Woodstock. Organic produce, weight loss, and immune support supplements working to help maintain winter health. Since 1978, Facebook, Twitter, and sunflowernatural.com. Mount St. Mary College in Newburgh. Master's in online RN to BS in nursing degree programs for adult students. Postmaster's nurse practitioner certificates in adult and family health. MSMC.edu. And Richards Fuel and Heating, East Hampton, Massachusetts. Providing high-efficiency gas and oil heating systems to the Pioneer Valley for over 45 years. Now serving the Westfield area, richardsfuel.com.
Pour that liquid down a man's throat.
Welcome back to the Roundtable and our discussion. We love to hear from you. Roundtable at WAMC.org, roundtable at WAMC.org. Texas State Senator Wendy Davis, who is running for governor of the great state of Texas, has admitted that some of the public details about her personal history are incomplete or inaccurate, according to a report in the Dallas Morning News. A rising Democratic star in the state of Texas, Davis has touted herself as a Texas success story. She said that she was a divorced teenage mother who went from living in a mobile home, juggling low-wage jobs, and going to community college to graduating from Harvard Law School. The Up From Nowhere narrative, which emerged during an 11-hour filibuster that she staged in June to oppose abortion restrictions, has been a central part of her candidacy and appeal, helping to boost her national profile and fundraising efforts. However, the Dallas Morning News reveals a more complicated narrative. According to the newspaper, Davis was not a divorced working mother living in a mobile home at age 19. Instead, she was 21.
Oh, big stuff.
Yeah.
And lived in a trailer for a short time.
It's a shocker.
Then, after a stint living with her mother, Davis moved into her own apartment. At age 24, she married Jeff Davis, a lawyer who, according to the report, helped pay for her final 2 years of college and cashed out his 401k and took out loans to help finance her Harvard law degree. Okay.
Yeah, I read this and I wanted to be outraged, and I'm finding it hard to be
outraged at who? At her?
Yeah, at her.
No.
It's so stupid to fudge, a political biography.
Why
but
do
I don't
people
see
do that?
Yeah, I know, because you get found out. The Dallas Morning News hound you and stuff. But I don't
but
see
no,
a big
no
variance
major, it's
here.
It's no major
I
gotcha.
Yeah, I mean, okay, so
but
she took money
about...
from her husband. Okay, that's kind of cool. That's what you're supposed to do. And
absolutely.
She still went. And she's you are. Spouses are supposed to support each other.
I don't know what was more priceless, your timing of delivering that or the look that Mike gave you when you said it.
No, the spouses are supposed to support
absolutely.
Each other. And
yeah,
she still
they didn't
went
know they
to
were
Harvard.
Be divorced, right?
Yeah.
You know, he probably thought it was a good investment.
And she paid him alimony later, so he got his money
she
back.
She paid him alimony.
Yeah, when they got
That's
divorced,
right.
She's paying him alimony. It's not like she got away with anything. And she still is a Harvard graduate. So what's the big deception?
Now, yeah, if they had shown that she wasn't a Harvard graduate, that would have been big stuff.
Right.
Yeah.
How
yeah.
Was
or
she
was
gets,
22 or
no,
21.
No, how old is she now?
Oh, I don't know, in her 40s.
So my question is that I think any of us in this room, when you are talking about your life, I mean, I don't know what happened at 19 versus 21. I mean, is it concrete to say that this is politically calculating and that she...
On whose part?
Hers.
Her handlers.
Meaning
yeah.
that she devised this story versus just not getting the facts straight because you can't remember of whether it happened in 72 or 73.
No. I thought you might be referring to Robert Redford in The Candidate, in which when there's a mistake made and they know it, they let it out early before it can be used, gotcha, at the last minute in a campaign.
I don't get how this can be used against her. It's not a big lie. In fact, I hated her answer. It's like, oh, I have to learn how to be more detail-oriented. Just, you
well,
know, shut up, Wendy.
That's the other thing. I thought, you know, just come out and say, look, it's the
it's
story
a minor
is
detail.
A story.
You're right. I'll revise it in the next edition of my campaign literature. Get on with it.
Yeah, well, this is going to be a dirty campaign.
Uh-oh.
Texas is a Republican state now. Here comes this woman who becomes a hero to so many people because she stands up in filibusters at a moment. And that is what people like. They want people who really are aggressive. Whether
and they
it's
want
not,
a nice
yes,
story to go behind
that's,
it. And
that's
somebody
right.
kind of edited this story to make it a little more powerful. And in the process, it's now backfiring.
And in her response, I mean, where I would disagree with you, Rosemary, is that I thought, I mean, she came out pretty forceful in saying, I came from where I came from. I'm proud of that. I'm proud of what I've been able to achieve through hard work and perseverance. And I guarantee you that anyone who tries to say otherwise hasn't walked a day in my shoes.
I like that response, but that was not all that she said. She added the part about, I have to learn how to be more detail-oriented and not just speak broadly.
These kinds of tests of politicians become useful in as the voters make their evaluations, I guess. You know, how she handles this and how she comes through it will define her success.
She's
or not.
Running behind the Republican candidate
it's a
right
tough,
now.
It's a tough race.
If this is what knocks her out, man. I just can't see it.
No, she's got to show her some real strength here in order to win.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, if she could internalize it and sort of like pick up some momentum in her response.
How dare they?
Yeah, I guess. And I guess the Dallas Morning News might have to go after her opponent, Greg Abbott.
It's the least they can do.
Right.
All right, final topic for the morning. This is a story out of the Los Angeles Times. And as soon as the Los Angeles Times confirms that I am indeed a member in good standing, they'll let me...
if he knew anything about it.
You're the oldest person on the panel, so you have to talk about
it. I am certainly the oldest person.
You like to boast about
that. I'm so old that I'm almost all of your age put together.
Enjoying life makes...
makes you healthier.
Makes you healthier. Enjoying makes life people... enjoying life makes you live longer and be happier.
Well, what do I have to say? There are days I think that I'm enjoying my life, and there are many days when I say... How dare they?
That has nothing to do with aging.
But the premise is...
Are you saying happiness is good for your health? Is that what this
premise
is really saying?
Yeah. Happiness is good for your health. The other story that was on the BBC at 3 o'clock this morning, which I heard, was a lot of sleep helps your health.
It also makes you more capable. That living a happy life makes you more capable, so that you're able to do more for longer.
So what do you think, Joe? Am I a happy person?
Well, yeah, you know what? I would say, I mean, I know where you want me to go here, but I would say that the joy and the drive that you have to come in and to do this every single solitary day would indicate there is a great happiness that you have in what you have created and what you bring every day. So, yes, I would say, I mean, obviously you have there are the annoyances and there are things, but I would think overall there is that drive there. Isn't this basically this article distilled to what we've always heard, is that if you keep active and if you keep busy,
you won't get
Alzheimer's. You're happy doing what you're doing, that you're going to be happier in your later life.
Yeah, I read it and said, man, I got to get to the gym. every article in the paper seems to lead to the damn gym.
What was Norman Cousins, his mantra? Wasn't it that if you...
Yeah, laughing.
If you laugh, and you're happy, you're going to live long,
Did you
and you're going to be healthy.
Job?
I think
that
was right.
Yeah, I thought so.
Yeah. Well,
Mom, are you laughing? Mom, are you laughing out there?
But I thought the word capable was interesting. Make you more capable.
I guess if you are happy and you can find humor in things and you can sort of compartmentalize the negatives and not be overcome by them, you are less stressed and therefore you can devote your resources to being positive and more successful.
So I know. Once again, I wonder about the study. How do they know that if you're not a capable person to begin with, you're more likely to be happy? How did they know one comes before the other?
I may be able to answer that if the damn Los Angeles Times will let me log on, but they're not letting me. Connect. They say I'm abusing my privilege. I've used just one too many articles. How'd you get it? You must not go there every day. we're out of time, but I thank you very much for being with us. Rosemary Armeo, Alan Chartok, and Mike Spain. Thank you all very much. A reminder, you can email us roundtable@wamc.org.